Okay,
everyone, so welcome to the Saturday meditation. And we'll do as what we normally do. I'm going to talk just a little bit in general about meditation practice, and then we will get a chance to test it out afterwards in practice, see if it actually works. And as I was mentioning in my talk last night, some of the obvious obstacles in meditation is the movement of the mind being busy, thinking about various kind of things, going to all kinds of thoughts about the past and the future and fantasies or what have you. And this movement of the mind is interesting because it is driven largely by craving. And of course, craving is always about the external world around us, about all kinds of things in that world. So to reduce the movement of the mind is actually tantamount, or the similar thing, to removing an interest in the world outside. If you reduce your interest in the world outside, your mind becomes peaceful almost automatically. These things are very closely connected to each other. And so how can we do this in a way that doesn't depress us? Yeah, sometimes if you look at too many faults in the world, you get depressed, and that's not the point. Yeah, we don't want to get depressed. You want to do this in a happy way. So how can we combine the idea of letting go of the world outside, but also getting a kind of boost of good emotions in our practice at the same time? This is really kind of critical for making this path work. One way of doing that, and this is also what I was talking about yesterday, is the idea to remember that the external world is actually not all that important for our happiness in the long run. What is it that enables our happiness in the world? Well, actually, it is more about our inner life than the external world outside. And it's such a simple idea, yeah, that your future does not depend on the external world so much. The external world obviously has some impact on our future, but it's not all that great. The main impact on our future is how we live now. If we live well now, the future is going to be bright. Why? Because we're building up this resilience, and we're building up these beautiful qualities inside that we will take with us into the future. And that is what we're doing now. Yeah, this is what we're doing on the spiritual path. This is what we're doing in Buddhist meditation. This is what we're doing by practicing kindness and generosity and all of these other aspects of this path. That is really where it is at. This is where our future is made. And once you get that, you actually become less interested in the world, because you know the world doesn't really have that much to offer you anyway. More of the same. We don't know what's going to happen to the world next. It's too uncertain. It's too unreliable. Why be interested in something which is so utterly unreliable as the world outside? That withdraws your interest from that world. And at the same time, it gives this very powerful sense that actually, I can still create a good future for myself. It just happens somewhere else. It happens on the spiritual path, not in the world outside. So you get a sense that you have found something very precious in life, but finding a realistic spiritual path that realistically can take you in a good direction. And then you have the joy of having a refuge. This is the idea of having a refuge in the Buddha Dhamma Sangha. You have a spiritual teaching that you can apply in your life, that you can go to find solutions to the real problems that we have. So there's a dual thing there, turning away from the world outside, and at the same time finding joy in something more profound, something more meaningful, that also has the ability to then give us all of those things that we thought we should get outside, but actually we find them within instead. So try to use these kind of reflections a little bit. Remember just the uncertainty of the external world. There's nothing there of interest. There's no real future in that world because it's just too unreliable. The future relies on what we're doing now. Now we're making that future. This is where the future is made, depending on what we do in a meditation practice as we're doing here, right here today. Okay, short introduction for you. Let's try some meditation in practice. Okay, so as always, just start off the session by relaxing, making sure you are at ease, you are relaxed, you don't have any problems, any pains or tensions or anything like that. A sense of just sitting here quite contentedly, without any problems really in the physical body, and then just allowing yourself to relax. Patience is always the fastest way, and just enjoying the atmosphere and gradually allowing everything to become peaceful and beautiful. And as you settle down in your meditation, make sure you combine this idea of giving up the outsider with appreciating what you have right here and now. So give up that uncertainty outside and appreciate the peace, the stillness, the quiet, the joy of just sitting peacefully and doing nothing at all. You reject the dukkha and you move towards the sukha, the happiness instead. as you carry on calming down, letting go of the world outside, make sure that during this process you have a sense of care and self-compassion for yourself. As long as you have that sense of care and self-compassion for yourself, you will not grasp too much to the present moment. You will just allow it to flow. And when you come to the breath, instead of grasping the breath, you're just aware of the breath when it's there. Instead of forcing the breath to stay with you, you look for the beautiful, delightful qualities in that breath. You make the breath your friend. And when you make the breath your friend, you will be able to stay with it because you enjoy the company of a good friend. Okay, so coming close to the end of the meditation, before we come to the very end, just spend a few moments reviewing what has happened over the last 45 minutes or so. In particular, try to understand the causes that give rise to peace and quiet in the mind. What are the perceptions that you give rise to? What are the intentions that you have that lead you in the right direction? Okay. Okay, everyone, are there any questions or comments or anything? Yeah, please.
Accepting your breath is your friend, which is something.
Yeah.
Therefore, can you hear me right?
I can hear you, yes.
Therefore, I linked with it more that way by knowing that was it went straight into, you know, just now, you know, it's very good. That's the best way. I've always struggled with the breath a little bit,
yeah,
and often use my old mantra to help me process. That's all. Thank you.
Excellent. Good. That's marvelous. Yeah, that's the idea, is to have a positive relationship with your meditation. Yeah. So if you have a good relationship with your breath, then it makes it easy to stay with. That's the whole point. So. Exactly. So, marvelous. Yes, Thomas.
Ajahn, can you talk about the posture, the leaning back?
The posture?
Yeah, the leaning back and the start of the meditation.
Sure. So the idea of the posture is just to kind of get the body out of the way. That's the purpose of the posture. Yeah. So any posture where you feel at ease, where you feel relaxed, And very often it can be useful to lean back in the beginning, and that's why sitting on a chair can be useful to start with, or lean against the wall or something. Because initially you just want to relax everything down. You don't want to have any tensions, any pains anywhere, anything like that. And a lot of the monks that I know, they will often start off, because if you are meditating by yourself in your little hut or whatever, you start off by leaning back. And then as you kind of meditation starts to happen, then it's almost as if you straighten up automatically, because that's what the body wants to do. So it's quite a common thing to do. So sometimes by trying to, you know, sit straight away on the floor, it may actually be counterproductive. So just go with the feeling, what feels good, what feels relaxing, what actually makes you feel at ease. And as you do that, you're on the right track. Some people even lie down in the meditation. A lot of people who do that who have a lot of success with that. Some people do all kinds of things. Certain things probably less suitable than others. If it works, it's good, basically.
I was at your last workshop, and every now and again you stopped and we had a little meditation.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
During that little time frame, what do you use as your object? What could we use as the object?
Usually I don't use an object. When I do a 5-minute meditation like that, I just kind of relax, allow things, let go of things. Because when you are either, even if whether you talk or whether you're just listening, your mind tends to, you know, get involved with the material that you're doing. And sometimes you just need to let go of everything and just allow everything to be here. So I just kind of enjoy the peace, enjoy what is here, and just relax, basically. That's what I do. I don't really have any object at that particular time. And then once the mind is peaceful, then kind of it's very easy to take up the workshop again, because your mind is a little bit fresher, even for 5 minutes. It's easier to think clearly and to progress in the right way. Yeah.
Is something like that useful to do to break up a busy work day?
Absolutely, yeah. It's marvelous. A lot of people do that, actually. I think it's quite a common thing to actually just, you know, relax, bring yourself back to more to a zero point, a kind of starting point, you know, so you bring back some of the energy that you had when you started your day. And there are some stories that, I don't know, this is a story Ajahn Brahm tells. I don't know when this happened, but he tells the story of a lawyer, apparently. I don't know, I think it was in the UK, who had this cabinet in his office. And then during the day, he would kind of lock himself into this cabinet and he would kind of stay there for a few minutes. Then he would come out afterwards and we carry on again. So whenever he got a bit stressed out, he would kind of creep into this cabinet and lock the doors. And you don't have to go that far, but just sit on your ordinary chair, close your eyes for a few minutes, and just relax and bring back some of that kind of energy that you had when you started the days. Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you, thank you. So a couple of questions from outside. This is from Yongji An from Singapore. Bante, is letting go referring to relinquishing the false idea of a self? In part it is. Of course, the full giving up of that idea is a very profound thing. It happens at a very late stage on the path. But in a sense, the whole path is also about letting go of the idea of a self, because the doing comes usually from the sense of self. So if you do less, if you become peaceful, if you think less, there is less self there. Yeah, you can see that the self manifests through the thinking process. I want to do this, I want to do that, I am this kind of person, whatever it is. When the mind is peaceful, there is less self inside of you. Yeah, the self kind of is vanishing. What does that feel like? It feels really nice. Yeah, and this is one of the reasons how we know that the self feeling actually is a problem, because you feel much better when the sense of self starts to disappear. So you could say that it's a gradual relinquishment of the sense of self until at the very end of the path there comes the big relinquishment, which is the ending of the whole process. Then we have JB from the USA. I have a hard time differentiating the physical symptoms of anxiety and my chronic health condition. How should I deal with my anxiety as well as the chronic condition? The chronic condition, you're just going to have to be patient with. And unfortunately, often there's not much more you can do, but actually that is already a great help to be patient with your chronic condition, because most of the suffering comes from not wanting it or not desiring it. So if you're able to be patient with it and just stay with it and accept it for what it is, then you're already on the right track. Anxiety is always about the future. It's about some kind of fear of what may come. And very often you realize by going, you know, past the point of that anxiety, what it is pointing to, whatever future it is afraid of, you realize that anxiety is always a false idea of the future. Yeah, well, 90% of the time it is false. It turns out the anxiety was there for no particular reason. So after a while, you start to look back on your history, and you start to realize that the anxiety is a false perception of the world. And once you start to get that, you can also start to let go of it a little bit, because it actually isn't real. The other thing is to remember that if you are on the spiritual path, like I said at the beginning today, your future is made by the qualities of your person, yeah, the qualities of your heart, how you live your life. That is how your future is made. Your future is not made by what happens in the external world. And that is a great way of overcoming so much of the anxieties of the modern world, because there are usually external threats to us that we are anxious about. And if you are in control of your inner life, which you are, actually there's a much greater grounds for being optimistic about the future. You can do something about that. So remember that your future depends on your inner qualities, not so much on the external world. And then we have one from Eddie Tim. Dear Ajahn, I'm Eddie from Indonesia. Hello, Eddie. What do we do with numbness, pain, and sound or distraction? How do we know that we are inclining in the right way? So if you have too much pain in the body, then I would, if you can see, it's too much usually when your mind gets distracted. Yes, when you feel that you are getting distracted by it, your mind is getting obsessed by the pain, it is time to change the posture. Yeah, sit in another way. Move your legs a little bit. Don't sit with prolonged periods of pain, because really, it is exactly what the Buddha said we should not do. He said we should find the middle way. We should not torment the body. It's the first thing the Buddha said in his teaching, and it's the first thing that people forget, which is kind of interesting. So please don't make that mistake. Yeah, it's what they call a rookie mistake, but everyone seems to be making the rookie mistake. So what to do? And the sound or distraction, well, sound or distraction, you deal with really in a slightly different way. If you cannot get rid of the sound, very often we cannot control the sound. Just like today, we had a lot of wind here during the meditation. And the wind is just nature passing by. If you just allow the wind to come and go, it is completely, it doesn't matter very much for your meditation. Yeah, it is just there. And people around you, they are like the wind. Yeah, remember that. It's such a beautiful perception. People around you, when they make a noise, they're not there to irritate you. They are like the wind. People are also part of nature. They just do their thing. They don't really understand what they're doing. So think of the people around you as the wind. And when they are like the wind, they are no problem anymore. Any noise that you hear wherever you are, treat it like the wind. Treat it like the wind in the leaves of a tree. Yeah, it is just nature doing its thing. And then you can focus on whatever peace is present. And there's always something peaceful you can focus on. Stay with that. Allow everything else to go. And this is from, I don't know how to say this name, Opie Amy or something like that. Amy? Opie Amy? Anyway, how is flow and momentum relevant in Buddhist meditation practice? It is very relevant because the idea of flow is really just mindfulness. When you are really mindful and you are letting go and you're not using your will anymore, you're just staying with the breath completely naturally, well, that is really what flow is about. Flow is the effortlessness of things. When we have to make an effort, it is by definition not effortless. So the moment things just flow naturally, without you doing anything, that is the idea of right mindfulness on the path. And that will eventually lead you to really profound meditation if you can do that. Effortlessness in being with the breath. No sense that you're trying. It just happens because you're enjoying what you're doing. It's a beautiful and delightful experience. Momentum. Well, momentum here is just that you are carrying on. You're doing it over long periods of time. And as you do things over long periods of time, gradually the mind settles down and down and down. I remember in the early years when Ajahn Brahm taught meditation, whenever he was asked a question, well, you know, what should I do next? And Ajahn Brahm's question was always, sit longer. That was his answer. Yeah, sit longer. But I sat for 2 hours, sit longer. And there's some truth to that, because it goes deeper and deeper and deeper, yeah? Unless there is a hindrance, a blockage on the path, and then you can sit as long as you want. Nothing is going to happen, of course. You have to look out for the hindrances. At the same time, keep on going to allow the momentum to build. Okay, everyone, that's everything for today. So let's pay respect to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha.